Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you very much for that. I wasn't expecting that. It shows how dangerous Twitter can be. But actually, in a way, Kate, you've summed up my thesis so well that I could almost stop now and save some time in the programme, but that probably would be slightly rude. So I will say a few things, and hopefully this works. Thank you very much for... you've changed the layout. It's nice. My slides were quite boring. These look better. I was asked to talk about what do patients say about care in the home and community, and I feel slightly nervous about that because, in a way, you're probably more expert on this than I am. I mean, you work with patients all the time, and you do fantastic work, and I think you know a lot about this. So I think I'm not here to tell you what matters to patients and what patients think, because I think you kind of know. But what I am going to do is maybe help you think about your own experience, reflect on it through a slightly different prism, and that's the prism of the work that I and National Voices do, primarily at national level, but increasingly we're in the business of trying to influence not only policy and opinion, but also practice. So what does matter to patients from our perspective? I'll start with National Voices just to say a little bit about the organisation. We've been going for almost 5 years. We're a national umbrella group of patient and other health-related charities. And so, in a way, the work we do is slightly at one remove from the frontline world of care and patients. But we work a lot with our member organisations and with patients and service users and patient leaders throughout the system and try and synthesise and bring together the key messages and then use them to reflect back to the system what we think matters. And we've been growing our reputation and profile as an organisation trying to change the way people think and behave and make policy with some success, I think, but I'm also conscious that there is so much more that we could do to promote genuinely person-centred care, as well as being an effective umbrella organisation, which is part of our job, a critical part. And for us, person-centred care is about much more about good care at or closer to home, because we know that's what people consistently want. It's not that they don't like hospitals and don't want to be in hospital. They just don't want to have to be there any more than is necessary. We're a long way away from having a system that seems to really recognise that. So that's enough advert from about National Voices. One more. These are the big wigs who come to our annual conference. You might recognise some of those faces. That was the last one back in January. So I'm going to say just a bit about, I mean, this is almost like stating the obvious, but this is what, it's a summation of research evidence and other evidence partly drawn from people like Angela Coulter, who's an expert in patient engagement, who's also on our board of trustees. So I won't read this out, but these things are kind of obvious. This is what people consistently say matters to them. Safe, effective care, good information, good access, being involved, being treated with dignity and respect. We know this, in a sense, and you know this. The trick is how do we help to cultivate a system of care that can consistently deliver on this, and it's very difficult to do that. So that's one of the experiences of care that is common to people struggling, people and their families struggling with the complexity of complex health conditions. This is a fantastic diagram that was produced by a wonderful lady called Barbara Poynton. Some of you may be familiar with her. She, for many years, looked after her husband, Malcolm, who was a composer, who had a slow and progressive form of Alzheimer's and has now sadly died a few years ago. And she tells a very powerful story about both the good things and bad things about his care. The good thing, in a sense, was all this stuff available, all these different services that met different parts of his needs. So, in a way, a fantastic testament to the NHS, particularly the light blue things, because that is free at the point of use, and some of the other things weren't, because we also have a means-tested social care system, which is a real difficulty. So a fantastic web of care and support, but it was a nightmare to try and knit it all together. It was disjointed and fragmented, and often wasn't delivering good care. And in a sense, the care coordinator was Barbara by default, although she had fantastic support from specialist dementia nurse as well. This is there's a growing recognition that this is the world in which people live. It's slightly different depending on the conditions that you have, but more and more people, and not just elderly people with dementia, have this kind of complex web to navigate, and it's really difficult. And so as a response to that, National Voices has done a lot of work, and we've been working in partnership with some fantastic other agencies like Think Local, Act Personal, in the social care world, to develop what we've perhaps slightly pompously called a narrative for person-centered coordinated care. But the narrative is about trying to describe what good care looks like from the point of view of the individual patient or service user and their family members. And the point about calling it coordinated care is because there's been a lot of talk about integration in the kind of policy arena, and integration is a kind of rather jargon word, and it means different things to different people. So we've tried to kind of say, well, people actually say they want it better coordinated, better joined up. So we did this work, brought together, synthesized the views and insights of patients and service users, organizations that work with them, and some of the research evidence, tested that out with real people, and came up with a narrative which has been adopted by NHS England and is part of the underpinning of the work that they're doing to promote better integrated care across the English NHS. I'm just going to say a little bit about some of it, but I won't go into too much detail. I don't want to lose my audience in the detail. But that's it in a nutshell. This is about person-centered coordinated care. The definition for us is I can plan my care with people who work together to understand me and my carers, allow me control, and bring together services to achieve the outcomes that are important to me, that matter to me. That, if you like, nobody would say that, but if you like, that's a distillation and a synthesis of what matters to people in this area. And there are different strands, the importance of care planning, the importance of having a service that's designed around people's goals and preferences, not just the views of clinicians about what is important, but how that fits in with people's lived experience of living with particular conditions. The importance of information and good communication. The importance of having a say in decisions. And the importance of transitions from one care setting to another. We know that all of these are pinch points in areas where things don't always work as well as they should. So I'm just taking a few of these. So goals and outcomes. We know from, and there's very good research evidence, that where decisions are made that are made with people's goals and preferences about how they live their life explicitly on the table, you end up with better quality decision-making and often better health outcomes. It's a very well-researched area, perhaps more so in the United States than in this country. So the whole shared decision-making agenda is, I think, has gone up the policy agenda, but it's still quite difficult to deliver in practice. And I think there is a view sometimes that if people are very old, particularly, but not just old, or if they have other capacity issues and they're very infirm and they have lots of health problems, that we need to rush in and rescue them and make decisions for them. But all the evidence suggests that actually people do want to be involved in decisions, and they can be if they're given the opportunity. So designing the care around people's goals is so important. Care planning, absolutely central. A care plan in which the person has been fully involved, which isn't just something that sits on a shelf but is used. It's a working document that you go back to and review and is the basis for a package of care. And there's lots of evidence that if you want good care for people with continuing needs, you need good care planning. National Voices is doing some further work to develop a set of principles for care and support planning that try to bring together the similar but slightly parallel worlds of care planning in a social care context and care planning in a health context. They're quite similar. They tend to be done in parallel tracks. But so many people, the kind of people that you look after, have both health and social care needs. We're trying to bring that together in a way that we hope will be genuinely helpful to care professionals. So care planning is fundamental. Information. I have the information I need and the support to use it to enable me to make the decisions and choices that I want to make. So critical, but we're still so far away from doing that consistently. So the government has an information strategy in health, but I think we're still a long way from seeing that really rolled out consistently. Communication, the bugbear about people having to tell their story again and again and again, about not always being listened to, not always being involved. Communication are really, really fundamental. You know this already. And in fact, in a funny sort of way, much of the material in our narrative echoes the findings. It's fantastic. I don't know, you probably know this. This is, I actually picked this up from a table at this very hotel for the Q&I conference last year, and I've kept it and referred back to it, Nursing People at Home, and it's a really fantastic document by Q&I. Really demonstrates the value that Q&I bring to this field, and it has very similar stuff in it about what matters to patients, which is why I was nervous about telling you, because you kind of already know this, I think. Decision-making, it's absolutely critical that people have a full say in decisions. And there is a difference, a fundamental difference, between seeking people's consent to a decision that effectively you've made and actually a shared decision. I think nurses kind of get this better than doctors sometimes, if I can be slightly controversial, but in a friendly audience full of nurses, so I think it's probably okay. There's been a lot of talk about patients and the importance of patients. Patients first and foremost, I use as my title. I could almost have put it in inverted commas. And the rhetoric about patient-centered care has been ramped up in recent years, and particularly under the coalition government. And I think many of their policies are well-intentioned, but also, in a way, quite vague. What does it all mean? It's never been entirely clear. And I think there are two aspects of thinking about patients that have really come to the fore in the last couple of years. One of them is what you might call patient as victim or potential victim of harm, for understandable reasons, because much of the last couple of years, in fact much longer when you think about it, has been dominated, overshadowed by the things that went wrong in Stafford Hospital and then the inquiries that followed. Robert Francis has loomed like a dark shadow over the health service, both when people were anticipating his inquiry and then when they were kind of trying to digest and respond to what he said. What Francis has helped to do is reinforce the sense that patients can be vulnerable, need to be protected, need to have compassionate, respectful care that respects their dignity, need to have good basic care in institutional settings but also at home, and that we need to do more to protect them, hence the emphasis on inspection, hence the busy lives of the new chief inspectors, including Steve Field. I guess he's too busy to come here because there's an awful lot to do to be a chief inspector of primary care. I won't comment on whether the focus on inspection is a good thing or a bad thing, but I think I will comment that the focus on patient as a victim is double-edged. Because what it does is emphasize that the powerlessness and helplessness of the patient and not the potential of the patient to be powerful and in control. And therefore, while it's a really important part of the picture, it is only part of the picture. The other bit, the other way of looking at the patient that's really, I think, loomed large under this government, but it was also quite big under the previous government, was the notion of what I call patient as consumer. That if you have information and good choices, you can choose the care you want, you ought to have a good responsive service, you ought to have good information, you ought to be able to compare and contrast with good data, and hence we've seen a huge focus on transparency about the comparative performance of different parts of the health service. We've seen a huge emphasis on giving people choice of where to go if they're going to have different elective procedures. We've seen the friends and families test, which is a direct borrowing from the retail industry. And again, I won't comment on the merits of that particular test, but I think I will say that the patient as consumer, while it is an important strand and it's been very underdeveloped historically, is only part of the picture. Healthcare is not shopping, and the parallel with markets and shopping can only be taken so far, in our view. It misses out an important part of the patient experience. So this is a way that National Voices attempts to present different ways of looking at patients, and you'll see that the patient's customer is one of them. But there are different ways of looking at patients, and one of the ways that I think we tend not to think about patients, and indeed citizens and service users and the public more generally, is as owners of the enterprise. This is the last bastion of the welfare state. It's paid for out of the taxes. The first line of the NHS Constitution says the NHS belongs to us all. Well, if it does, and it does, then we're the shareholders. We are the owners of the business, not to the exclusion of the staff who work in it, but we are all, including the staff, owners of the NHS. What would the NHS be like if that was really lived out? Because I don't think it is, and I think it's worth pondering. Or How would we do things differently if patients were treated as, but also felt themselves to be, the co-owners of a shared collective enterprise? Patients are citizens, and we've heard Crystal was talking about the needs of people with complex health needs, people with learning disabilities, children. The notion of citizenship and rights and entitlements, particularly if you are vulnerable or from a marginalised community, really, really important but often overlooked. And with rights come responsibilities. The need for people to take more responsibility for their health, to recognise and understand the patterns of behaviour that lead to poor health. We're partners in our care. I said it came out in our narrative. Really, really critical part. We need to be seen as partners. Not everybody wants to be a partner, but often people don't get the opportunity to be a partner in the care. We are increasingly, whether people like it or not, managers of our health conditions, because our interaction with health professionals is intermittent and episodic, but people with long-term conditions are living with those all the time, 6,000 hours a year compared to the few hours of time with health professionals. So we're managers by default if we have long-term conditions. The question is how good we are at it and how much support we get to do it really well. We are customers. But let's put the customer bit in its box. Some people are patient leaders, service user leaders, lay partners, and that notion of patient leadership is growing in force, but it's still, I think, a bit countercultural. If you've got a personal health budget, in a sense you're a commissioner. That's really powerful, except if you don't have much money and there isn't much choice of things to commission, then maybe it's not so powerful. But the notion of personal health budgets, and particularly in the social care field where it's been better trialled, it is incredibly empowering. And of course patients live in a context of, not always, because social isolation is a real problem and a potential killer, but people have families and the need to engage with family members, relatives, carers is so critical, but the NHS as an institution I think struggles to find a home. For, you know, the unit of analysis is the patient and sometimes the population, but often not the carer, the family member. And of course we live in communities, and communities should be partners in decisions as well as individuals. So that's on one slide, a little rant about how to think about patients in perhaps a slightly different way. What needs to happen? This is the house of care. It's a diagram of a model of care that came out of the diabetes work, the year of care model, which is all about recognising that if you want to help people live successfully with diabetes, you need a number of things in place. And it was very interesting when Crystal talked about 10% of the NHS budget. That is right. I was at an event at the Labour Party conference. So one of our jobs is to go and try and influence the politicians of all parties. And there was a very interesting event that was chaired by Diabetes UK with some quite scary statistics. So about £10 billion is spent on diabetes care, which is more than the entire budget for domiciliary care. The figures aren't precise because it's difficult to get the data, but approximately 80%, £8 billion of that money is spent on dealing with the avoidable complications of diabetes. So strokes, heart disease, foot amputations. 80% of that money is spent on dealing with the consequences of not having dealt with the diabetes better at an earlier stage. The year of care model, the house of care model, is an attempt to deal with that in a number of ways, and it recognises there's no magic bullet. You need a system of informing and engaging, equipping the patient to be able to live more successfully with their condition. You need healthcare professionals who can work in partnership around a care planning process. Those are the kind of pillars in the centre of the house. And then you need some commissioning to get that right, and you need other organisational processes. But the pillars are really central. And that model of care, which recognises the really important, the crucial element of a wraparound primary and out-of-hospital service, is one that we and a number of other organisations are pushing quite hard for the NHS to adopt in a systematic way. And if that was done systematically, we'd be investing in education, training and support for people with long-term conditions, not just medical and clinical support, but practical, emotional, social support, some of it quite cheap. It doesn't cost much to organise some volunteers to go and visit older people in their houses, but that small investment could save a lot of money later on. So House of Care is really important, and the model, suitably adapted, would work across the area of complex need and long-term conditions, not just diabetes. So in a nutshell, that I think is what needs to happen. At the Labour Party conference, I had the opportunity to speak to Andy Burnham and Liz Kendall, the two leading front-bench spokesmen on health. And they were talking about their vision for whole-person care, which Liz Kendall described as a bold vision. And part of the boldness was about having a single budget for health and social care and giving that money to local authorities. And it is a bold vision, an interesting vision, and it's got some difficulties in it, but you can't argue with the vision about whole-person care. But I did challenge Liz Kendall, and I said, only a politician or a bureaucrat would think there's something inherently bold about taking streams of money and putting them into a single pot and then giving them to somebody else to have responsibility for. That's kind of bureaucrat's view of the world. What would be really bold would be to have a wraparound out-of-hospital service, which we don't have, and a real drive to create that. That would be bold and difficult to do, challenging, so really bold, brave even. And to have a system that didn't treat the patient just as the victim, the person that is done to, but saw patients as partners, as managers of their care, who could take so much more responsibility and be so much more in control if they were allowed to do so, and the same with communities. So I think that I've ended up in a very similar space to Crystal. I've probably gone way over time. Thank you very much for listening. We are ardent tweeters in National Voices, so please follow all of us, actually, who do the tweeting. And thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from PolicyReview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.